one of the best days of the year for us Browns fans besides draft day, the season ending. To a better 2018.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter at redrock_bball. We are back. It is the first podcast for 2018. I hope all of you had a happy and safe New Year's Eve. And now we head into 2018 and see what's ahead of us for the new year. What we're going to talk about today is break down the seven games from New Year's Eve, preview the four games for New Year's Day, have a look at the week ahead, and talk about the other teams that we didn't get to cover. So there's lots to get to in today's podcast. So Michael Bolton has a message for everyone.
Let's get to it.
Mr. Bolton, thank you. Let's talk the week ahead. Week 12 in the NBA. It's a bit of a weirder one. One of those ones that we used to be prone to getting, I guess, with the big fluctuations in games played. We've got games every day of the week as per usual. On Monday, we have four games. Tuesday, five games. So a really lean start to the week. Then it cranks up. 12 games on Wednesday, two on Thursday. So a really small Thursday. 10 Friday, 8 Saturday, 5 Sunday. In a daily changes league, you're really going to be targeting Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, Sunday as your streaming day. So you've got five streaming days. So it is a possibility to get guys in and out of your lineups to try and maximize the games played. Wednesdays and Fridays, it's going to be pretty tough to get guys off the waiver wire and actually find a spot on the active roster for them. But of course, that's always an individual decision based on your team, who you're adding, all that sort of stuff. But they're not the days that we're going to focus on when we look at streaming value. We will start off doing daily changes leagues, then we'll head to weekly changes leagues. We'll start with the daily changes. As I said, we want to target those days for streaming purposes. The things that we want to do on those days is have a look at how we can maximize our additions. So by looking at back-to-backs and pseudo-back-to-backs, and by a pseudo-back-to-back, if you're a long-time listener to this podcast, you'll know what I mean. But basically what it is it's two low-volume days with a high-volume day in the middle. So say Tuesday, Thursday. If you add someone from a team who plays both Tuesday and Thursday, you can get two games for the price of one. But even though there's a day in the middle, even if you use that roster spot on that Wednesday, you probably wouldn't be able to find them into your active lineup anyway. So it would be pointless. So adding a guy on Tuesday, you get two games for the price of one addition. Monday, Tuesday, we've only got the four and five games respectively. There's only one team that's got a back-to-back on Monday, Tuesday, and that's the Portland Trailblazers. That could mean really good things for Shabazz Napier. We know Damian Lillard's missed the last three games with a hamstring issue. If Lillard is unable to go on Monday, then he might be a possibility he doesn't play Tuesday. Napier is the guy to have a look at there. If you're talking deeper, you want to look at Mo Harkless, who's been back in the rotation. You can also have a look at Zach Collins or perhaps Ed Davis if you're looking for some defensive numbers to start off the week. Pat Connaughton's another guy who might be worth looking at. Evan Turner can dish. You know, he could have 10 assists in those two games. Zachy Collins, another guy who can block some shots. So there are some available options on the Blazers, especially with so few games on. Yeah, those guys might be able to provide enough value for you to use. Tuesday, Thursday, there's only one team with that pseudo back-to-back, and that's the Clippers. Austin Rivers is a potential to return on Tuesday, so that could cut some value down from guys like Juwan Evans, who started in his place today. Also reduces a little bit of the value of Lou Williams. The guy we want to look at here is CJ Williams, who's been starting in the position of Danilo Gallinari. Wes Johnson hasn't got that role back yet. Williams played over 30 minutes in today's game, and while he doesn't do a huge amount, again, getting two games worth for one acquisition can be really useful. You can also look at Montrezl Harrell, the table, Sammy Decker as another option. Then, of course, if Miloš Teodosic is still around, I'd be making sure I grab him. Thursday and Saturday, another one of those pseudo back-to-backs surrounding Friday. You've got three teams that have that. It's the Rockets, it's the Warriors, and the Clippers again. So, yeah, realistically, with the Clippers, you can get three games of action for the addition of one bloke. So whether that's Decker or Williams or Teodosic, if he's around, or Harrell, whoever it is, you add them on Tuesday. You can play them Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, and not worry about the absences on Wednesday, Friday, because you're not going to be able to use someone on those days most likely. Anyway, for the Rockets, it depends on the status of Jim Harden, who did have a hamstring tweak that took him out of the end of today's game. That could open up some streaming opportunities for PJ Tucker, Gerald Green, Eric Gordon. They all get boosts in. Gordon's probably owned anyway, but those other guys all get a little bit of a boost there as well. Whereas the Warriors, Jordy Bell should be owned, but if he's not, this is another a good opportunity for him. Andre Iguodala could be an option across that Thursday-Saturday situation there also. Then the last one, we got Saturday-Sunday. No teams have a Saturday-Sunday back-to-back, so not a lot to really look at there. The other thing I like to pay attention to a degree, is three games in four nights. Depending on how your roster shakes out, you might be able to get three games with one addition in just 4 days, and there's a few of those this week. Starting on Tuesday, there are three teams who then play three games in four nights, the Spurs, the Suns, and the Knicks. And on Wednesday, we've got a bunch of teams. The Wolves, the Bucks, the Bulls, the Celtics, Pistons, Rockets, Raptors, Wizards, and Warriors all play three games in four nights beginning on Wednesday. Let's have a look for weekly leagues, how this all pans out in terms of games played for these teams. There are six teams that play just two games this week. The Hornets, the Pacers, the Grizzlies, the Pelicans, the Sixers, and the Kings. So obviously not a great situation if you own any of those guys. Out of that group of teams, you've got Boogie Cousins, Tone Davis, Joel Embiid. They're probably the only must-start players out of those group of teams. Vic Oladipo, he would be, but we don't know if he's going to play in one of those games, so that rules him out. Kemba Walker wouldn't do it. None of the Kings guys, no chance. Marc Gasol, no way. Jrue Holiday, Ben Simmons, Bob Carver. I think it's really tough to start any of those players with just a two-game week on. On the flip side of that, it's the four-game teams. We've got the Bulls, Lakers, Knicks, Bucks, Wolves, Suns, Blazers, and Spurs. And then you've got the majority of teams playing three games. And that's where a lot of your lineup decisions are going to have to be made. Hawks, Celtics, Nets, Cavs, Mavs, Nuggets, Pistons, Warriors, Rockets, Clippers, Heat, Thunder, Magic, Raptors, Jazz, and Wizards all play three games. But as we know, not all three-game weeks are created equal, especially in terms of the quality of teams they're playing against. The Magic, for example, play against the Nets, the Rockets, and the Cavs. And while the Rockets and the Cavs are good teams, they do allow a lot of fantasy points. Same with the Nets. So there's some good value there that the Hawks and the Celtics and the Thunder have all got pretty good weeks in that regard as well. On the other side, the Heat have a terrible situation. The Jazz, the Pistons, and the Knicks, teams that haven't been all that exciting in terms of giving up fantasy points. You got the Clippers and the Mavericks, who also have pretty rough schedules. The Mavs take on the Warriors, the Bulls, and the Knicks, while the Clippers have the Grizzlies, the Thunder, and the Warriors. Of course, we've got all this set up over on Basketball Monster, and you can check this out on our schedule analyzer. I talk again about, you know, quality games quite a bit, and it is important for that. That's more for daily changes leagues, but yeah, teams like the Blazers, they have three quality games this week. I think that's the most out of every team apart from the Clippers, who all three of their games are quality games. So the Clippers only play three games, but yeah, versus a team like the Knicks, who play four games, but only two of them are on usable days, then maybe adding a Clippers guy at the start of the week for a not a weekly changes league, in a limited situation where you're not streaming, you know, that team that plays the three quality games is going to be a better option. The Kings, for example, play two games, but both of them are on low volume days. So you can get two games out of those guys. Whereas, say, adding the Celtics players, if you're adding a Celtics bench guy, Terry Rozier, you might only be able to use him once, even though they do play three games. So it is important to pay attention to all that sort of stuff when looking at setting your weekly lineups. Tons of stuff to get to on today's show. We're going to now look at all the guys, all the teams that played on either Friday or Saturday that don't play, or that I'm not going to talk about in the Sunday coverage or in the Monday preview, just to give you a little bit of information about what's going on with those guys. So we'll get stuck into that right now. We'll start off with the Golden State Warriors, who I did talk about a little bit earlier on. There's not a huge amount there, except the return of Steph Curry. We forget how good Steph is. He was just absolutely bananas in that return. He is elite as a fantasy player, elite as an NBA player, we know that. And it was just really good to have him back. The other guy that's interesting is Jordan Bell. Two, you know, not great matchups for Jordy. Dwight Howard and Marc Gasol still put up good numbers and still played 20 minutes a game there. So he is a must-own player across all 12 and 10-team leagues. I don't think he's playing 26 or 27 a night. In that second game against Marc Gasol, we do have to remember that Draymond was ejected. But I can't see any situation where he's getting under 18 minutes a game. And in 18 minutes a game, Bell can absolutely have standard team value or standard league value. So make sure that he is owned in your league. I assume he already is, but if he's not, go and do that. The Detroit Pistons, some interesting things there. Reggie Bullock continues to shoot at just a crazy, crazy level. It will not stick. It's impossible. He's hitting like 60% of his threes, 60% of his shots, and there is absolutely zero chance of that continuing. He's a very nice streamer for points and threes. He can get some steals, but when the shot doesn't fall, his minutes might drop, and then all his value disappears. So while it looks sexy now, and you go, man, must own Reggie Bullock, killing it, killing it, killing it. Yeah, but it's just impossible for that to continue. Like, he won't continue to be a 65% shooter, because unless your name's DeAndre Jordan, nobody is. And Reggie Bullock is not DeAndre Jordan. We also had a massive game from Luke Kennard on Saturday, I think it was. I like Kennard from a dynasty perspective. I've said this before. He can handle the ball. He can get steals. He can rebound. He can hit threes. He can score. He can be efficient. I don't think he's going to get a massive chance to do that this season, especially with Avery Bradley's return coming up pretty soon. But he's an interesting dynasty lot guy to pay some attention to. And Dwight Bikes took over the backup point guard role from Langston Galloway. So Galloway, who had an opportunity with Reggie Jackson out, has not been good in the two games so far. So in a deeper league, just keep an eye on it. But Bikes might be a guy in a 20-teamer that you want to have a look at. The Denver Nuggets, the Blue Arrow, Jamal Murray, killing it at the moment. Look, some shaky stuff early in the season. Shaky coaching, shaky shooting. Everything is on fire for him at the moment. He just looks confident, self-assured, and he is comfortably a must-own guy and one of those guys that I'm sure you'd be having fits about kicking yourself if you dropped him, much like Joshy Richardson. Sometimes it does pay most of the time, it does pay to have a level of patience with these guys. As for Jokic, he's playing a lot of minutes at the moment, and he is fairly strong with what he is doing. The minutes are super encouraging at 35, 36 minutes a night at the moment for Nikola Jokic, because
it's pretty good. It's pretty, 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 pretty good.
Haven't dropped that one for a while. Thought I'd throw that in. The Miami Heat, talked about Joshy Richardson already, some nice numbers from him. Hassan Whiteside back to 29 minutes in the last game. And that might reduce a little bit when Jim Johnson returns. It's also going to have an impact on Kelly Olynyk. Now, Olynyk, of course, is a must-own guy at the moment. But once Johnson returns and Whiteside's playing 29 a night and they still want to get Adebayo in there, which I'm not 100% confident they will continue to play decent minutes to Adebayo, Olynyk's numbers are going to drop, and they're going to drop down decently significantly. But for now, he is a guy to own. Just watch, I guess, where that ends up. Rajon Rondo had an okay game across the weekend, played 33 minutes. That's encouraging. It wasn't fantastic. Still had double digits and assists, and not like that 25 assist game. But the other numbers just aren't really that great for him. I would still be holding him, of course, but he's a situation to watch, especially for the New York Knicks. Mick Beasley continuing to get playing time at the expense of Lance Thomas and Doug McDermott. I don't know how much of that's going to be sustainable once Timmy Hardaway returns, because I feel like Beasley's getting minutes at the three here because they just need some scoring punch. And when Hardaway comes back in the next week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, will they need Beasley to play minutes at the three? Will they resign him back to being a backup four and play more Lance Thomas at the three to provide a little bit more defense there? But for now, if you need points, Beasley can be a 12 or 14 team league guy, because I feel pretty confident he's going to get more minutes than McDermott and Lance Thomas on the majority of nights. Not every night, but the majority. It's been a weird situation for Enes Kanter after Christmas, where he put up big, big numbers. He has been extraordinarily limited. We're seeing more Porzingis at center, a little bit more of Jeff Hornacek's cock out there as well. So we're not, and weirdly, in the last game against the Pelicans, Joakim Noah played 12 minutes. I wouldn't be expecting that to be a consistent thing. I guess when you're going up against Boog and Tone Davis, you want to throw some bigger defensive bodies out there. Not panicking or anything with Kanter. Yeah, he's a guy that we have to keep holding, but it has been an interesting turn of events, I guess, is the best way of phrasing that. The Atlanta Hawks, the artist formerly known of Taurean Prince, is continuing to put up some really big numbers. Of course, he is a must-own guy. And the Baptist, John Collins, the minutes aren't quite there, getting like 24, 25 a night, which is fine. I would still 100% be owning him. Let's just hope they do start to give him 27, 28 a night. I really hate using the term unleash. It gets overused in fantasy circles all the time. I have a bunch of words that get overused in fantasy circles or phrases. And unleashed is one of them. Scoop is one of them. Anything to see here is one of them. You've heard me say I try to avoid saying them as much as possible, but they do get overused, in my opinion, in fantasy circles. So maybe the Hawks will unleash the Baptist, John Collins. But regardless, even in 25 minutes a night, he's a guy you want to own. On to the next team, we'll talk about the Utah Jazz, the Don. Don Mitchell is just killing it at the moment. I wasn't sure how much he'd be able to keep his usage up or his efficiency, but it just continues to grow. He looks fantastic. He's handling the ball more. He is a comfortable top 50 guy. And I said the other day, I think on Friday's show, that he potentially has Gilbert Arenas-type fantasy upside, which is top 10. And that's not going to be this season, but the more and more I see him, the more I'm convinced, I go, you know what, he will be a top 10 guy at some point. And that's just crazy, crazy to think for an undersized 1.5 guard. And he is just doing shit that's really ridiculous. Now, Rick Rubio, the ravishing one, many people would have been a little bit disappointed with him this season, but he had a nice game against the Cavs. But remember, it's the Cavs. Point guards against the Cavs tend to put up good numbers. He's still a hold at the moment, Rubio, but don't think that this is automatically a turn-the-corner type situation. The San Antonio Spurs, Kawhi, 28 minutes. He'll be back to his 32, 33 pretty soon. And we saw in that game where he played 29 minutes or 28 minutes that LaMarcus Aldridge's usage fell. And I think that's going to be more realistic expectation for LaMarcus as we move forward. So keep an eye on him. You might still be able to get top 30 value back for Aldridge in a trade. And if you could, I would do that. Rudy Gay injured out for the next 2 weeks. I've got no idea why people still think he's a 12-team league guy. He hasn't been one of those pretty much all season. Get rid of him. No point in holding on there. And the last team to chat about here, the Cleveland Cavaliers. Isaiah Thomas will be back. Lots of talk about Isaiah thinking he's going to be back to the same guy next year. I think that there is zero chance of that. A, he has to share with LeBron James. B, he is coming back from a hip injury, which is a significantly bad injury. He's got to then adjust to a new team and new teammates. He will still be fine. I think a realistic expectation is not top 12, it's top 30. I think that's a more realistic expectation for Thomas. And even if he doesn't get there, don't be surprised. But don't go trading away guys like Nikola Jokic to try and get Isaiah Thomas back. I think that's a bad idea. And expecting him to come anywhere near what he did last season, Thomas, I think it's a tough ask, especially given where he currently sits with that injury news, or with the injury that he's dealt with for as long as he has. That's all those guys that we're not going to talk about in other portions of the show. Their names might get slotted in there. So we'll check about that, especially a Miami Heat player who's going to be the player in the player spotlight section, which we talk about later on. So be ready for that. Let's now go to the monstrous line of the night. And it is Karl Anthony Towns. 18-14 for Townsie. 4 assists, a 3, 2 steals, 6 blocks, and 6 of 11 from the field. Still not huge shot attempts there, but he has pushed himself back inside the top 10 this season. He's the 5th-ranked player over the last month. We still could do with an increase in usage, just 21.6 usage rate over the last month, 23% for the season when he was at 27 last season. We need to take some of those shots away from Andrew Wiggins and get them into Towns' hand. But the fact that his block numbers are higher this year than last year, that's really helping his value. He's at over 2 per game over the last month, 1.6 for the season. If he can get that to 2, 2.5, then he really does become that top 4, top 3 sort of a guy. Now, I did have hopes of his blocks going up this year, playing alongside Taj Gibson, forcing him to play center more rather than on the perimeter next to Gorgui Dieng. Didn't really transpire early on, but recently he started to get that going. The field goal percentage has been pretty consistent after a poor start last season, which affected his end-of-year numbers. But he has been really good. We still hope for more. We still hope for more usage. We still hope for more shot attempts for Towns. Not sure it's going to come, but the other numbers have been fairly steady for him, and he gets himself a monstrous line of the night. The waiver wire line of the night goes to Frank the Tank Kaminsky. 16-8 for Frank, 2 triples, 1 assist, 1 steal, 2 blocks, 6 of 12 from the field, and 2 of 2 from the line. He's playing a little bit more center now with Cody Zeller out, and it also helps that Michael Kidd-Gilchrist and Marvin Williams are just absolute flaming bags of shit at the moment. So Kaminsky is getting his playing time go up. Over the last 2 weeks, he is the 82nd ranked player, averaging 14-5 with 1.6 triples, but a lot of that is because he is shooting 44% from 3 and 52% from the field numbers, which are in no way indicative of what he has done throughout his NBA career to date. So don't buy too heavily there. I said at the start of the season multiple times, I think this is the year that Kaminsky can finally overtake Marvin Williams. It hasn't happened yet, but it should, because Williams has been terrible for the majority of this season. Frank hasn't been fantastic, but this is an opportunity for him. I don't think he's a 12-team league grab yet, but he is someone to pay some attention to, because I think it can come, and I think that we can get some well-rounded lines that do push into... from now on, he could be a top 120 guy. He could be a top 100 guy. I don't think it's going to happen, but there is that chance. So he's someone who we watch, and we watch how that minutes distribution goes pretty closely. It's one of those things that I do pay probably way more attention to than I should. The young gun of the night goes to Dario Saric of the Philadelphia 76ers. 27-4-2 for Dario. 4 triples, 3 steals, 1 block. Insane shooting. 9 of 13 from the field. 5 of 5 from the free throw line. He is amazingly a top 20 player over the last 2 weeks, averaging 19.5 and 7.5, 2.5 threes, 4 assists, 1.3 steals and 0.5 blocks. I was very much down on Saric heading into this season, not because I don't like him as a player, just because I wasn't sure how he was going to fit, and I'm wrong. I'm being clearly wrong on that. I still don't know what Markel Fultz is going to do to him in terms of his value when he comes back, but will it be Jared Bayless that gets completely excised from the rotation? Yeah, very much could be the case. Timothy Luwawu-Cabarro plays a little bit. I think he'll be definitely out of the rotation. I think that Saric is fairly safe as a must-own guy. I'm not 100% sold on the fact that he's shooting, over the last 2 weeks, 47% from three. Not sold on that. But I like the fact that his steal numbers are way up on last season. He's at 1.3 per game in those last 2 weeks. He was at 0.7 last year. He's giving you double the assists that he got last season in these last weeks as well. And that efficiency is way up. So he is a must-own guy. Wasn't expecting this from him. Wasn't expecting him to fit so seamlessly next to Covington, Simmons, and Embiid. But he has. The shooting is really good. He had nice true shooting, 65 over the last 2 weeks and 55 over the course of the season. And for those of you who don't know, true shooting encapsulates free throws and three-pointers, and league average is about 55. So when the Nets announcers say that you can't leave a shooter wide open, let alone a pure shooter like Terry Rozier, and he has a career true shooting of 46, they are 100% inaccurate because Terry Rozier is a terrible shooter. 55% is your true shooting league average. And again, it takes into account free throws, three-pointers, two-pointers, all those sort of things to give you a way of being able to quantify players. You know, there's obviously higher averages for centers because they're getting such a high field goal percentage, but that's a way of incorporating all the shots on a basketball court. And Saric's numbers are way up. He was at 50% true shooting last year, 55.5% this season. So a significant leap forward for him. He has been very, very impressive. The dart of the night. I tell a man's not hot. Zach Randolph. 4 points for Zebo, 6 rebounds, an assist and a steal on 2 of 7 shooting. He played just 19 minutes. There is so much that is weird about this Kings team. They have had a different starting lineup in 8 of the past 9 games. And even in amongst that, the minutes change for these guys on a nightly basis. Jason Jones of the Sacramento Bee had an article the other day saying Dave Yeager ignores his critics. He doesn't care. He can't play all of his youngsters at the one time. But that ignores the fact that he is an absolutely shitful coach and none of his decisions make any sense. This is a team that is 29th in the league in offense, 30th in defense. They have the 29th highest, by that I mean second worst, three-point attempt rate, the 29th highest, second slowest pace. They're just terrible. Okay, everything about them is, there's another stat that I'm missing there as well. 3-point attempt rate, pace, true shooting percentage as the second worst in the NBA as well. So not only do they have a poor offense, they have a worse defense. They don't shoot threes for an excitement level. They don't play up tempo. The shots don't go in. And then today they trot out a bullshit starting lineup with 4 veterans in it and we give 20 minutes to Vince Carter. Nothing makes any sense. Yeager can talk all he wants about plans and rotations. Nothing makes any sense. The minutes change on a game-to-game basis. The roles change. The starting lineups change on a game-to-game basis. The veterans aren't getting you wins, Dave. You are a terrible, terrible team. It's not getting you wins. And you can say, oh, yeah, well, it's our tanking. We're trying to get a draft pick. Well, if you think the veterans are so much better than the young guys, you're trying to get wins. And I know you are trying to get wins because that's what coaches do. And it's not working. It's horrible. Get the young guys in. Give them consistency. There's only like 2 blokes on this team who have any consistency in minutes played, but not role. Bogdan Bogdanovic and Willie Cauley-Stein have consistently 29 to 30 minutes a night, but they could start one game, come off the bench the next one, and none of it makes sense. The players they play with changes on a consistent basis. And I know that we're talking about Zach Randolph here, but that's fine that Randolph played 19 minutes. The fact that he is running out there with a 27% usage this year is just ridiculous. And over the last 2 weeks, it's gotten higher. He's at 30% over the last 2 weeks with a true shooting of 52% in that time, which is just, again, really, really bad. I don't think that you should own Zach Randolph in 12-team leagues. He is the 91st ranked player this season, so it might sound stupid to say don't own him because he's been good. But I can see his minutes coming down, but literally nobody knows anything that's going on with this Kings team. Nothing is set in stone. Everything is written in the lightest possible pencil of all time. It's erased. I swear on Saturday, they had two starting lineups, and they were both different to the game before, and they changed within 5 minutes of each other. Nothing makes sense with anything they do. We still haven't seen a starting combination of Labissiere and Cauley Stein on the front court. We're seeing Malachi Richardson start at power forward. Today we had Randolph and Kufos in the front court. This is just piss poor coaching at its finest. And as for Randolph, I don't think he's a 12-team league guy, but that just gave me an opportunity to just rail on the absolute shitfulness that is Dave Yeager and the front office and this Kings organization. And I love Kings fans. They're fantastic. They deserve more than that. Great new arena. Give them something. Give them an upper tempo game. Give them the young players developing in a consistent basis. Give the team to the young guys. At least let them develop something of some level of consistency rather than punishing them or seemingly punishing them for one game's worth of suboptimal performance when you let a guy like Randolph, who has been good at times, and you can say, before I put on my dickhead voice, I need to check. He's averaging 15-7, man. How can you say he's not good? Because he gives up about 40 on the other end. And he stagnates the offense. And the other players can't develop or can't get anything going because of him. It's very similar to the Rajon Rondo argument I have with people. Led the league in assists, mate, when he's with the Kings. You don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, that's cool because he was a hunting assist. He was slowing everything down for everyone else. He was giving up way more points on the other end. Just because you're putting up those numbers doesn't make you good. And 15-7 for Zach Randolph is fine on the surface and he can generate his own shot. But to what end? It is just, and I'm going on about this for too long and I'm going to stop, but the Kings are the most frustrating team to deal with from a fantasy point of view, from an NBA point of view, a development point of view, and I'm sure they're fans, although there are some of them who argue with me all the time, front office is doing a good job, mate, what are you talking about? No, we're really building for the future, mate, Yeager's the guy. And there are many others that follow me that are completely in agreement, just go, what is this bullshit that is going on continually with this team? I could be off base on some of this stuff. I don't think I am, otherwise I wouldn't have that opinion. Let's now pivot to the question of the day for you guys who are new listeners or other listeners who have had last week off due to the Christmas break and haven't heard the show. It's something that I'm introducing to this podcast, a question that I source from a listener each day along with another segment we're going to do later on. So now let's crack on to question time. And today's question comes from Rob Bowen, who's on Twitter at Bowen Rob. He says, who do you think this season will gain all-star selection for the first time? That's a really good question. I've got seven guys on this list. Now, they probably all won't get into the All-Star game, but there are seven guys who I think have got realistic chances to become named first-time All-Stars this season. And when I do this question of the day, it's not going to be a very specific question about your team. Like if you say, oh, should I drop this person for this person? That's not the question I'm going to answer. It can be fantasy related. It can be NBA related. It can be life in general related. You can talk about beer. You can talk about food. You can talk about gardening. Whatever question you want, we're going to throw something in just to mix the podcast up a little bit. Now, this question, I really like it from Rob. So these are the names that I've got. Victor Oladipo is a guarantee to have his first All-Star berth unless he's injured. He's currently dealing with a knee thing. Joel Embiid is a guarantee for his first All-Star berth, again, unless he is injured. I think Kristaps Porzingis is a lock for his first All-Star berth. Then there's a couple other names who I think will get in. Nikola Jokic, I think, should be in for his first All-Star berth. Karl Anthony Towns probably should be in as well, although his defensive shortcomings have been an issue, but I think he should probably be in. Not 100% sure on that one. And then you've got two Eastern Conference guys that, given the lack of talent or the lesser amount of talent in the East, these guys have a legitimate chance. One of them is Ben Simmons, who I think has got a really good chance of getting in. And the other is Aaron Gordon of the Orlando Magic. They're two guys with question marks next to their name. So that puts me at seven guys. Embiid and Simmons, Oladipo and Jokic, Porzingis, Towns and Gordon, all players who I think have got a chance to become All-Stars for the first time this season. And I will lock in Embiid, I will lock in Oladipo, and I will lock in Porzingis. And I'm not sure if I'd lock in Jokic. I'd go closer, but I'd lock in at least three of those guys. And I think there's a decent chance for six of those seven players to become All-Stars for the first time this season. So thank you to Rob for that question. Let's now get into these games, talk about the box scores in a little bit more detail. All seven games from New Year's Eve. We'll get stuck into those. Now, the first game, the Chicago Bulls and the Washington Wizards. Nick Mirotic, 21-4-4, three triples in 28 minutes. He had a usage of 30% in his 28 minutes. Continues to just look fantastic. There will be some shaky moments, clearly has to be owned everywhere. Don't expect this level of production all the time, but he's really, really good, and I'm glad that people are finally getting to see that this guy is actually a good player, that he can do more than just spot up from behind the three-point arc. Now, he'd been at like 62% three-point attempt rate last season. He's down to like 48, because that's what everyone, oh man, if you're just a three-point shooter and you can't knock him in at 40%, what are you doing? And the argument I used to have with people, he's not just a three-point shooter. He can do way more than this, but the offense is being hijacked by Rondo, by Wade, and to a lesser extent, Jim Butler. And that's really impacting Mirotic, although Mirotic and Butler playing together was the Bulls' best lineup by a considerable margin last season. He's been awesome, as has Chris Dunn. Happy to admit when I am wrong. I'm not fully ready to say I'm totally wrong on Dunn. I thought he was bad. No, let's get this straight. He was bad. He was terrible last season. I thought he wasn't going to become good. I did say that he had a great opportunity to become a really good fantasy player this year, just from pure bludgeoning of numbers. But I didn't expect his efficiency to jump up as much as it has. He's shooting the ball really, really well, and that's helping him. The turnovers are still a problem. He still has some issues with his on-court play. I don't think he's ever going to become a star-level guy, but the numbers are great. 19, 7, and 11 for him. David Nwaba played 25 minutes, or as the Wizards announcers like to call him, David Nwaba, 11-6-2 with 3 steals in 25 minutes. A nice performance, but he is more a 14-16 team league guy, while the Hammer Denzel Valentine, only 23 minutes. He's up and down, but I wouldn't want him in a 12-team league either. Justin Holiday was okay. I think he is a borderline 12 guy that will lose minutes once Zach LaVine is back in the next couple of weeks' time. On to the Wizards. A close game, so what Scott Brooks does in these close games is plays his backcourt in particular. Huge minutes, 45 minutes for Brattles, who was really stiff to miss out on the monstrous. 39, 9 and 9, 7 triples and 2 steals. But when you miss 2 late free throws and go 0 of 2 from the line overall, that does hurt your numbers in the end. Well, Johnny Wall had 21, 6 and 9 with 4 blocks and 2 threes, but his field goal percentage was a big detriment, going 6 of 20 from the field. Mike Scott, the man who just sometimes just can't be stopped, that was one of them here. 27 minutes, 17 and 4 on 7 of 11 shots. I think he hit his first 8 shots in this game. But we know that when the shot doesn't fall, then the minutes go to 17, the production's nothing. So he's a, oh shit, I need points, man. Where can I possibly get them? Or in a DFS perspective, you're looking at GPPs, or can someone blow up? He's your guy. Consistency, not really his thing. Otto Porter, 9, 7, and 2 with 2 steals, while Markeith had 5 and 11, and he ceded playing time to Scott in this one, while Marcin Gortat, 8 and 5. I can't say it enough. Don't own him in 12-team leagues. He's owned in 84% of leagues because, I don't know why. Yep, I don't know, because he's got a pretty sick mohawk. Maybe that's it. It's not for his production, I can tell you that. The Timberwolves and the Pacers, this was an absolute spanking, and conversely, Jim Butler played only 27 minutes. It's a minor miracle. You have to double-check that box score and go, is this real? Because this doesn't make sense. Because even with the Wolves up 24 points with 3 minutes left, Towns was still on the court. So it wasn't like Tibbs was going soft or anything. Butler just didn't need to be out there. 26, 6 and 5, 3 steals for Jim, while Townsie had another big game, and Taj had 17 and 9 with 2 blocks and continues. Taj just shoots at such a high level, such a high percentage, just way, way above anything he's really done in the past few years. Tyus Jones, 27 minutes. This is why you picked up Tyus Jones, for 6 assists and for 2 steals. He gets your steals by the bucket load. He's getting pretty good assists. The scoring's not going to be fine. It's not going to be high, but that's what we talked about. That's what they want in a point guard, and that's exactly what I want them to use, and I really want Tyus Jones to stick as the starter. The problem is, of course, is that Jeff Teague will come back. Now, there was a weirdly worded tweet from Jerry Zagoda today saying that Jeff Teague was available, and he was in uniform, and he was on the bench, but he's not going to play. And I just made me think, what the hell's going on here? Why is he in uniform, sitting on the bench, ready to go? That's a absolutely remarkable recovery if he's like back this early. Like, we're talking less than a week here for Teague. I don't think that'll be the case, but it was a weird scenario to see him there, and a weirdly worded tweet that made you think, shit, is he going to play? Apparently nothing has changed with his timeline. We're still here out indefinitely, and Woj tweeting 2 to 4 weeks, so expect that 2 to 4 week timetable to be what we're dealing with, but it was weird. Wigo had 14, 2 and 2 in 31 minutes, continues to just be a putrid fantasy player and not much better of a real life guy. While we actually got 3 minutes of Cole Aldrich, 4 minutes of Marcus Georges Hunt, and 4 minutes of Shabazz Muhammad, pretty much the world was ending for that stuff to go down. The Pacers were just horrendous. Their starters didn't score a point for what felt like forever. So don't get overly, you know, into looking at this box score. Mighty Joe Young, good stuff. 20 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists. He's a guy I've spoken up a little bit about over the past couple of seasons. Regressed significantly last season, but he's looked better this year. With Collison and Joseph far from long-term solutions, maybe Young can move into a backup role at some point. but that's not going to really have too much impact this year. Now, everyone's really ready to pile on Miles Turner. He was shithouse. 1 point, two rebound, one assist in only 19 minutes. Missed all five of his shots, but still had two blocks, which is keeping his value afloat. And this is the perfect time to go and buy low. For some reason, Miles Turner is very much eclipsing Nick Batum as the player that fantasy owners hate the most. This guy is soft. How can you be 7 foot and not get a rebound? Bloody useless. Kind of terrible. Still a top 50 guy. Yeah, look, he hasn't taken on the massive, massive leap in usage that we thought he might. And he's had some really confusing performances. And I think a lot of it comes from the fact that he suffered that concussion in like game one or game two of the season. I think there's some lingering issues there with Turner that we're not giving full credence to. I would be buying as low as I possibly could. Throw Taj Gibson at the owner. Because I'm telling you now, owners are pissed. I say it all the time on Basketball Monster. This guy is terrible. He's soft. What a soft cock. Doesn't do this. People are emotionally reacting to performances like this. They get overly worked. Oh, he lost me my matchup. Man, what a bum. He's terrible. Useless. And it's just not the case. It's not the case that he's terrible. Yeah, he's been a little bit disappointing. No doubt about that. And I don't think he's going to be, you know, pushing to be the number one option on this team with the way Oladipo's playing. But yeah, there's all these calls, bench him. Sabonis needs to play ahead of him. I just don't see that at all. Now, Sabonis was solid. 8-11 with a steal and a block. But you go after your Turner owner. You go low. Go as low as you can. Lance started for Oladipo, had 5, 4, and 3. And Daz Collison had 5 points in his 20 minutes, but as I said, it was a bloodbath, so the numbers were a little bit all over the place. The next game, the Brooklyn Nets and the Boston Celtics. What a game from the Nets to force this one to be close. Caris LeVert is bloody good. He is really good. 16, 6, and 7, 2 steals and 2 threes in 30 minutes. And many people are saying to me, that sounded very Trumpish, I apologize. Josh, are you going to bump his projections on Basketball Monster? The problem I have with is that his assist numbers are way up. He's field goal percentage is way up. I think he's shooting 46% from threes over the past 2 weeks and 50% from the field over the last month. Now, he was a really good shooter at Michigan, but hadn't displayed that in the NBA until recently. But when D'Angelo Russell returns, what role does he take on? Does LeVert then move to play strictly off-ball, really cutting down his assist numbers? Does he take the backup point guard spot away from Spencer Dinwiddie? Who, and let's be honest, LeVert is a better player than Dinwiddie, and he's been outperforming him. You might disagree with that. Plenty of people are going to disagree with me with that. But LeVert's a better player than Dinwiddie. He's a better, bigger part of their future. And I want to see him start. I want to see him start a point guard next to Russell. I want to see that happening. I don't think it necessarily will, but it's something I want to see. Now, LeVert is a must-own guy, but there is a significant risk if Kenny Atkinson doesn't prescribe to my theory that he loses 4 or 5 minutes a game and loses a lot of ball handling responsibilities, which is going to drop his numbers down a lot. As for Dinwiddie, 10-2-9 in 29 minutes. He's still strong enough to be owned, but you know, I do think that he is going to lose some playing time. Well, the Blue Swimmer, 12-3-3 in 34 minutes, 2 blocks, cannot hit anything at the moment. If he can't hit shots, then he has no use in 12-team leagues. Rondé had 22-12. He's just been really, really good, unbelievably good. I don't know if him or LeVert has been better, but they've both been fantastic. While Sauce Castillo, shockingly enough, couldn't continue the big runs he's been having. Still had 3 points in 8 minutes and hit 50% of his threes, but just not enough playing time. And that, I think, will continue to be a concern, especially when D'Angelo comes back. The Celtics, Kyrie, 28-8, 2 steals, a block, 4 triples. Good numbers from him. Al Horford, 10-10-5. Or Terry Rozier, the pure shooter. 24 minutes for Rozier, 14-7, 2 threes, 3 assists, 1 steal. Really good stuff from Rozier. Fantastic numbers. But once everyone's back in business, he's just not going to play enough to be a consistent 12-team guy, especially with the Celtics playing only 7 games over the next 3 weeks. There's very little value there. Jaylen Brown returned, 13-3-2, a steal, 2 blocks, 3 triples. Good numbers. But those free throws, man. If you aren't punting free throws, he's a really, really tough guy to hold on to. I still think you should, but it is tough. Marcus Morris, 15 points in 17 minutes, got super hot, didn't do anything else. He requires either super hotness, super high usage, because he doesn't do anything, or super high minutes, because he just doesn't do anything else. He is not a 12-team league guy. While my man, Jason Tatum, really is a massive fan of the beard, he was 1 of 3 from 3 as those 3-point shooting numbers stunningly, shockingly, continue to fall under 50%. I had people legitimately arguing with me, no, man, he can probably keep it up. No, he can't, because nobody can keep 50% shooting up from three on decent volume. Nobody can. And I don't care what you say about him. He's good. He's very good. He's not that good. And his numbers are falling at the moment. He's still had a ridiculously high level. But 50%, I think that might be out the window. The Memphis Grizzlies and the Sacramento Kings, Tyreek, 26-7-5 with 5 triples. Big game from him. The Grizzlies are becoming one of those teams where you just never know what the hell's going to happen on a nightly basis. Marcus Solani, 24 minutes. Andy Harrison, 19. Dylan Brooks, 19. We had Kobe Simmons played 21. Wayne Seldon was exhumed, and he played 17 minutes. Mario Chalmers got 13. But I want to really focus in on Jarrell Martin and Deontay Davis. There's a real chance that both of these guys are better than Jamichael Green. 24 minutes for Deontay. He had 10-9, more of a center, while Martin had 11-1-2 with 2 steals and a block in 24 minutes. And I talked about Martin the other day. I think I did. He went from being cut, like literally reported Jarrell Martin has been cut, to then saying, oh, no, we'll keep you around. Then he started, and then he was out of the rotation, and then he's back in and playing really well. He's still just a deeper league guy, but Jamichael Green's not good. I don't think that he is a 12-team league guy, nor is Martin, but it's a spot to watch. Chandler Parsons was out again with knee soreness, and my projection of him being a useful guy sometime in January, it's not looking as good as what I thought initially. On to the Kings. I've spoken so much about this bullshit already. Cauley Stein was great. 29 minutes, 21-8, 2 steals. Must own. Bogdanovic, 8-5-5 with 2 threes. He is very, very good, and he should be owned. Budrick had 15 points in 31 minutes. I have very little faith in his minutes. I don't know what they're going to do from a game-to-game basis. He's a streaming option to me. Well, LeBissiere had 6-2 in 20 minutes, and Malachi Richardson went from starting to DMPCD to back to playing 19 minutes and had 7-2-2. Frank Mason sprained his ankle very early on, while Costa Kufos went from DMP to starting, and he played 10 minutes. Just a complete shit show this entire lineup. Vince Carter, who started 4 games ago, played 25 minutes and had been out of the rotation. He returned to play 15 minutes. The only consistency is that Garrett Temple will play minutes in the mid-20s and not do anything, although, to be fair, he was good in this one. Cauley Stein will get around 30 minutes, and Bogdan will get 30. Everything else is as up in the air as anything I've ever seen in the NBA. It's just, it happened from game one, pretty much. Just confusing shit constantly. The Mavericks, big, big win for Dallas over OKC. The pencil Harrison Barnes had 24-4-2 on some really efficient shooting, while my man Den Smith, 19-4-6 with 3 threes and a steal. He's coming off his first career triple-double on the weekend. You know, I'm big on Dennis Smith. I think that he can be a top 50 guy in March when everything starts to click. It's starting to look really good at the moment. He took over this game late. He was just too good for some of the players that were. Jeremy Grant was trying to guard him, but he was just too good for him. He's too fast. If the shot starts falling, which I have limited confidence in it, but if it starts falling, we're going to be looking at some real big numbers from Den as we push forward into this season. He should be owned in every single league. Maybe he doesn't get to top 50. Maybe that's hyperbolic from me, but he will be a comfortable top 100 guy in March and probably a top 80 guy with significant potential. He has looked really good these last 2 games. These aren't surprising to me. I've talked about him ad nauseum. Really good to see it starting to come to fruition. JJ Barea, I think he has to be owned in 12-10 leagues. 12-7-11 in 25 minutes for JJ has to be owned. I think, and I don't, again, because I talk on the podcast and I write articles as well, I don't know if I said it here in an article, but I think that there is a legitimate chance that Seth Curry doesn't play at all this season. I don't think it's above 50%. I think it's probably a 10% chance, 20% maybe. But I think that there is a scenario that's not outlandish where Seth does not play at all. And that's going to really solidify Barea's playing time and Yogi Ferrell, who had 26 minutes here. Dirk had 13-4, while Maxi Kleber just the 15 minutes. And Kleber, if Seth does return, Kleber's going to be a guy who does suffer quite a bit. On to the Thunder, no Andre Robertson. Westbrook had 38-15-11. Stupid efficiency, 61% from the field, and somehow only 57% from the line. That continues to be a real problem for him. Paulie George had 25 points with 2 blocks and 2 assists, while Mallow had 21-2-3. And Mallow has really turned things around after a poor little stretch there. Fatface Ray Felton had 12-6 in his 23 minutes. Good numbers there, but really nothing to get too excited about. It came with Andre Robertson out, with Josh Huestis starting for him, and he put up a steal and a block. He is an interesting block stream, Huestis. That's really about it. The Charlotte Hornets, the LA Clippers, Kemba Walker, 30 points, 2 assists, 2 steals, while Jez Lamb, only 24 minutes, and the numbers have been down for him, the minutes have been down. But when you get 12-5-5 with 3 steals, that's enough. Whether that can be continued, the 5 assists and 3 steals, I significantly have my doubts. But he's worth a hold in a lot of cases, but I wouldn't be like grasping onto him and going, man, he's going to do it for me. He's really going to do it. It's going to require more than these sort of weird performances. Kid Gilchrist had some foul trouble, 21 minutes, 6 and 7. Marvin Williams, just putrid, 0 points in 17 minutes. Well, Batum had 9, 5 and 6. On to the Clippers. No Austin Rivers. Lou Williams had 40 points, 8 assists, 6 triples on 57% shooting. Great stuff from him. Rivers could very well be back in the next game, but Williams is still going to get his going. While Milosh got some early foul trouble, 8, 1, and 5 in 28 minutes for Milosh. I think he should be owned. Many people don't seem to agree with that. Getting 5 to 7 assists per game is really useful. Juwan Evans started. He also got into foul trouble, 4 and 4. I like Evans. His ability to get assists and steals can be really useful. Think like a Frank Ntilikina light, more just a deeper league sort of guy. But once CJ Williams' minutes days expire, I think we might see a little bit more of Juwan. Wes Johnson played 26. That's the most he's played since returning from injury, 4 and 7. While Blake, speaking of return from injury, 25, 7 and 6, a steal, 2 blocks, 2 threes, just a fantastic line. And he has just picked things up exactly where he was before, which is great for his owners. The Lakers and the Rockets, a double overtime victory for the Rockets. Julius Randle started and he was a monster, 29, 15 and 6 with 1 block on 68% shooting. Just makes it even more ridiculous to know that he played 8 minutes in that first game when Brook Lopez was injured, and I railed against it at the time, just saying how absolutely bananas it was that when your starting center goes down, you play your backup center fewer minutes. It made no sense. Plenty of Lakers will say to me that Julius Randle is that team's best player. I put up a poll today, who is better, Randle or Kuzma, and stunned that 75% of people said Kuzma. Maybe Kuzma becomes better in the future. I think that Kuzma's value is overrated to an extraordinarily astonishing degree. I think that he's good. The talk that comes from him about him is astonishing to me. Now, Kuzma was still good here, 23, 5, and 3, 5 triples and 2 blocks. But I think he's overrated it to a degree, and that's nothing against the kid. He is really, really good. I just think that some people's valuations of him are a little bit off. Jordan Clarkson did not start again, because you know what? He's not that good. 21 minutes, 6 points, 2 steals, poor efficiency. With Lonzo Ball still out for another game, I don't know if Clark will be back. That's the last 2 games in a row that he hasn't started with different starters in front of him. We had Tyler Ennis in this one, 45 minutes, 20 points, 4 rebounds, 11 assists, and 2 steals. I've been talking about Clarkson a lot, saying his high usage, high efficiency combination wasn't going to be able to stick. The Lonzo Ball injury gave him a level of a reprieve, but we've seen in the last 2 games, or especially in this one, that we're getting the numbers come back to, I guess, what he is. And if Josh Hart, the hitman, if he continues to put up the numbers that he is, then Clarkson's going to be playing almost exclusively as a backup point guard. Speaking of the hitman. Josh Hart played 37 minutes, starting in place of Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. He had 26 and 6 with 4 triples and a steal, and this guy just makes plays that are good for the team. It also helps he's got a high steal rate, he can get assists, he can hit threes and do it efficiently. He was one of the top 8 guys, I think, in my projections on a per-minute basis coming out of college. And if he can establish himself in a role with KCP potentially walking, could Hart... Shit, I've had plenty of people... tell me again that they think that he's a better player than what Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is already. Better player than Clarko. He's been really, really good, the hitman. The Lakers play again on Monday, so he's someone to pay attention to there and definitely look to add him in that spot because Ball and Caldwell-Pope are both out. But whether he can maintain 25 minutes a night seems like a little bit of a stretch. But when he gets minutes, man, he just produces. It's as simple as that. Larry Nance, 7 and 5 in 18 minutes. If Randle and Kuzma are going to play big minutes, then Nance probably won't. I would have him behind both Randle and Kuzma, who are both must-own guys. On to the Rockets, Jim Harden, hamstring issue, 40 points, 11 assists in 41 minutes. The Rockets play 3 games this week, but their first game is until Wednesday. If I'm in a weekly league, I wouldn't be risking putting Harden in. You might get 2 games out of him, but I think it's more realistic that he doesn't play at all this week with a hammy injury. So we want to be careful that the beneficiaries are going to be Gerald Green and Eric Gordon, along with Trevor Ariza and Chris Paul. Paul had 28, 6, and 10. He had a minutes limit of 30 minutes. Luke Walton obviously running rotations for both teams because he played 42. 28, 6, and 10 for Paul, while Ariza had 26, 4, and 3 with two steals. While Green, his third game for the Rockets, 22 minutes, 10 points, 2 triples, 2 steals. Not a 12-team ad, but in a 16-team league with the uncertainty with Harden, I would add Gerald just to get some scoring punch. Clint Capela, only 7 points, but 7 boards and 3 blocks is a nice performance. While Ryan Anderson continues to be bad, 7 points in 21 minutes for the Rhino. The last game of the night, the Philadelphia 76ers against the Suns. Benny Simmons, 21, 9 and 6, 3 steals and 3 blocks for him. He had struggled a little bit recently, but this is back to the sort of numbers that he was putting up to begin the season and why, you know, he is, I'll continue to say, he is the favorite for the Rookie of the Year. Pretty convincingly, in my opinion. Love what Don's doing. Love what Tatum's doing. I would still have Simmons. The process, Joel Embiid, 22, 9 and 5, a steal and 2 blocks for him, while McConnell, 27 minutes, 8 and 5 with 2 steals. More of a streamer than a must-own guy, but really strong performance from him recently. Bob Cove struggled with fouls, so he only played 24 minutes, while Rashawn Holmes out of the rotation once again. Now, if Embiid's hand, which he did hurt later on, he was flexing it, stayed in the game, was able to shake hands with it, but if that causes him to miss some time, then of course you want Holmes, but otherwise he's just not a part of the rotation. So when Embiid plays, he just doesn't play, and having a guy that might play 10 more games this year, maximum. Try that again. Not maximum, but he might play 10 more games this year because Embiid could get hurt and he could play 50 more games. I just don't see it. The Suns, Marquese Chris. I've been pretty critical of him for a fair reason because he's been shit. But recently, he's been good. Now, he still fouled out in 20 minutes, but had 12 and 7, 2 threes, a steal, and 2 blocks. If he's on your wire, add him. I absolutely add him. I've said it many, many times that he does have the ability to be a real fantasy game changer. He just needs to stay on the court and needs to get that playing time. Now, his on-court work hadn't really married up to the stats that he'd put together, but he's been much more impressive and he should be owned. Devin Booker had 32, 5 and 6, while TJ had 28 and 3. Tyler Ulis, 6 assists and 4 steals, really just a streamer. Well, if you added Isaiah Cannon in 12-team leagues, please don't. Just get rid of him. 9 points in 18 minutes. Alex Len, only 17 minutes, while Tyson Chandler played 31. That's at 30 minutes in 2 games in a row for Chandler. Whatever's happening in that center position remains confusing. While Josh Jackson he's bad. He's bad at the moment. 12 minutes, 6 points, 1 steal. Maybe he becomes good. I have not been impressed with anything I've really seen from Jackson. Wasn't impressed with him in Summer League. Wasn't a guy I was super high on coming into the draft. Hopefully he can turn it around for Suns fans' sake, but he has been really, really bad so far, and he's seeing his minutes be cut at the moment. All right, that wraps up the action from the weekend, wraps it up from New Year's Eve. I'm going to go take a break, going to transform myself into the 2018 version of Josh. We're going to look at the player spotlight and then preview a 4-game New Year's Day as well. I will leave you with a song. It's going to be from Big School and it's called You Always, and then we'll be back to discuss Monday. We're back and we're going to head into the player spotlight portion of the show before we head into a 4-game DFS slate. If you are, again, new to the show or haven't been listening for the last week or so, there's a new segment I'm doing at the start of every DFS show is a player spotlight. And I send out a tweet 4 days of the week and you guys respond, you know, which player you want to hear me talk about. I've spoken about Jahlil Okafor. I've spoken about Jonathan Motley. I spoke about someone else, Zach Collins, and now we're moving on to this player now from the Miami Heat, and that is Tyler Johnson. Remember, on for Thursday's show, I'll be taking the request from YouTube. So you watch YouTube's the YouTube video on Wednesday, and you can leave your comment below as to which player you want me to discuss for the spotlight after. Oh, that's on Wednesday's show. But today, we're doing Tyler Johnson of the Miami Heat. Now, Johnson, he's a guy that came out of the D League then, obviously now known as the G League, and put up some impressive numbers, surprise impressive numbers during his first couple of seasons. Signed that big contract, which is really going to kick in with a big part of that contract next year, I think $15 million or $10 million a year for the next 2 years. And he has been super impressive lately with those injuries in the Heat backcourt. The iron shoulder, Goran Dragic, has been dealing with an elbow problem. We've had Deion Waiters dealing with an ankle thing, which looks like it's going to be persistent throughout the season. And that's giving Johnson more playing time than what he was getting earlier on. In fact, over the last month, he's getting 32 minutes a night and is the 71st ranked player, averaging 16, 4.5, and 2. Two threes a game, a steal a game, and shooting at a crazy 50% from the field, 43% from three, and he's at 80% from the line. I'm not sure, once Waiters is back, and if the iron shoulder gets things cracking back to where he was, and other guys like Jim Johnson, who handles the ball more, if these guys come back, you're going to see Johnson's minutes come down. He's only at 29 for the season, and I think we might see him down as a 27, 26 minute per game guy if everything comes back as it should. Now, we don't know whether that actually will happen, but you would have to assume it will at some point. For now, he's a clear must-own guy. I have doubts about the shooting. I have doubts about the 50% shooting, although in his second season in Miami, he only played 36 games, but he shot 49% from the field there and 39% from three, and he was at 37% from three last season. So he can shoot the ball. 50% seems a little bit high. But what his value really is coming on that last month is the scoring and the efficiency. He's getting 2 assists per game, under a steal, under half a block. So it is really propped up by this high efficiency, which is keeping his points, it's keeping his threes, and the field goal percentage. They're his three positive categories in fantasy. His free throws are right on even in terms of 0.05 in terms of Z-score contribution. So you're getting a positive points, threes, and field goal percentage. And if the field goal percentage drops, then you lose points, then you lose threes. So he's not far off becoming an overall negative player, and that gives me a level of concern. Now, Dragic is not, he's not young, but Joshy Richardson's around, Deion Waiters they're committed to for more years than they are with Johnson. Johnson is about to turn, he's 25 and a half, so he'll turn 26 at some point in 2018. In the next 6 months or next 5 months, he'll turn 26. So he sort of is what he is at this point. I don't ever see top 50 upside for Tyler Johnson coming. He doesn't provide enough assists. He doesn't provide enough in the steals numbers. Now, last season, he got 1.2 steals in 30 minutes, which is okay, but I'd want him to be getting 1.6, 1.7, and that would really make me feel confident in him having this great upside. For now, he's a must-own guy. I think that what we're seeing from him in this last month, in these last 14 games, is probably realistic ceiling for him, and that's fine. I don't love him as a long-term dynasty guy. I don't love him as long-term rest of the season. But for now, we own him. We see how we go. One thing I know is that one of the toughest bastards in the NBA gets his face cut open, nose bleeding, teeth knocked out all the time. Tough bastard. Love a guy that's tough. Love a guy that is able to hit some shots. I just feel there is going to be some level of regression coming from Tyler. And even over the last 2 weeks where he's seen his minutes jump to 36, we're still seeing him as the 70th ranked player, and that's because the efficiency has dipped, really showing that the efficiency is what's keeping his numbers up. Now, in that time, he's got his steal numbers going, but it still hasn't been fantastic stuff from him in that area. I just don't see him as any sort of elite potential, and I think this is pretty much who he is. Maybe he settles in as a 45% shooter for the rest of this season. I don't have him projected that high, but he could very well do that. But he's been definitely on a hot streak at the moment with his shooting, and that is definitely influencing what his value can be for fantasy leagues. For now, he's an ownable guy, but it could be a sell high moment in a dynasty. Some people do really like him, and you might be able to leverage that. The perfect DFS lineups from New Year's Eve on FanDuel: Tyler Ennis, 44.3. Yep. Russ Westbrook, 73.5. Rattles Beal, 67.3. And Lou Williams, 56.4. David as the Washington Wizards announcers would say. David Nubwa at 33.2, Trev Ariza 41.3, and Frank the Tank at 35.1, Benny Simmons 52.6, and Julius Randall at 56. That total was 458.7 for a cost of $59,000. On DraftKings, Lou Williams 59, Tyler Ennis 45.5, Trevor Ariza 42.5, Randall 48.25, Frank the Tank 34, Jose Juan Barea at 39.25, Blake Griffin at 47.75, and Rusty Westbrook at 78.75 for a total of 405 points, and that cost $49,300. Four games on Monday. If you are playing on DraftStars in Australia, there is zero chance of anyone getting the big 400 target on Monday. I would sit this one out. There is, I know it's only a dollar, but there is, on a four game slate, there is zero chance. And watch me be proved 100% incorrect. But there is zero chance of anyone hitting that. So save your dollar and put two in on the next day. On FanDuel, let's go to this one. Milwaukee and the Bucks. No, that's not true, because Milwaukee is the Bucks. Milwaukee and the Raptors. The Raptors are favored by 6, and the total is 215. One thing we know so far about these games is there's very little for us to know in terms of injuries, apart from the status of Dame Lillard in the last game of the night. That's really the only one that means anything. Everything else, we sort of know what's going to be happening with these games until some weird shit goes down, I guess. At point guard, Lowry is at 7,700, a big reduction in his numbers. Point guards have put up below average performances against Milwaukee, but a four game slate, I'm in on Lowry here. 40 point value is not a hard, it's not a stretch to see him getting that. As for the other side, Eric Bledsoe at 6,900. He has done very, very well against the Raptors in the past. I think it is a really good spot to use him. I can see using both Lowry and Bledsoe in cash lineups and in tournaments, and it being a useful strategy. D'Lon Wright's up to 4,200. He's had 33 over in the last game and averaging 23 over his last five. I think he's not a bad cash option here. He's going to get the steals, which we know are worth the extra points on FanDuel, which really bumps his numbers up. I think he's not a bad cheap cash guy to get you some other expensive players in a lineup. At shooting guard, Chrissy Middleton's at 7,100. Really like that price for him on FanDuel. He'd been priced a little bit too highly, and he's still too high on a lot of other sites. But given the way his salary is looking here, we're talking about, can he get to 36? That's not impossible. He had 37 in the last game. He gets 36 points. That's plenty of value there for Chris. I'm in on that. Well, DeMar DeRozan at 8,100. Again, a price drop for him. He's an interesting tournament guy, but I would rather take Middleton in a tournament, and I would rather take Middleton in cash. Tone Snell, Brogo, can't trust Snell at all. Can't trust Kidd at all. So really tough to use either of those guys. At small forward, Yanni Adetokounmpo is down to 10,900 because his numbers, let's be honest, they haven't been great, averaging just 46 over the last five, which is fine, but not when you're spending 12,000 or 11,500. At 10,900, he definitely is in play here. I would lean more tournament than cash, but again, given the restrictions of the slate, he's a fine cash guy. CJ Miles, the Jedi, OG Anunoby, both very lowly priced. I would look at Miles as a tournament guy with his ability to hit threes. At power forward, the Muppet John Henson, 5,300. He had 40 in his last game, has struggled against the Raptors in the past, but I'm okay with using him here. While Barker at 5,700 had that nice little stretch of his numbers coming back. He was suspended in the last game, but he'll be back for this one. Power forwards have really shit the bed against the Bucks. I think that Barker is more a tournament guy here with his recent form and with the matchup problems that could be caused. At center, Valanciunas is at 5,300. Big men against the Bucks have feasted a lot this year. Valanciunas, despite playing so few minutes, is averaging 29 points in 22 minutes over the last three games. And you get 29 points at 5,300. That's a big win for me. I can't fully trust it, but I'm absolutely considering him a GPP guy. If for some reason he gets 27 minutes, then a 40-45 pointer is absolutely on the board. And that makes him a good GPP guy. Jakob Poeltl's at 45. I don't think he's got anywhere near the upside of Valanciunas. And if it was coming in a little bit cheaper, I think he'd be almost a lock for cash value if you had 22, 23. In fact, I don't think you should completely steer away from him in cash if you just want a cheap center to fill it up. We're not going to be looking too closely at Thon Maker, of course. DraftKings tournaments, the Muppets at 4,500. I could consider that worthwhile in cash as well. And there's a bunch of cash guys I do like. Adetokounmpo at 11,000. DeRozan at 77. That's a nice price. And Lowry at 74. Super strong for Kyle. Eric Bledsoe, not as exciting on DraftKings. He's up to 7,000. I would lean more tournaments, but the fact that how well he does play against Lowry and the Raptors would give me a level of GPP upside-ishness and even maybe cash, but not as much as I would in on FanDuel. Valanciunas, again, still that GPP guy, but they've bumped him quite a bit on DraftKings up to 5,300 now. Let's go to the next game. We've got the Orlando Magic and the Brooklyn Nets. The Nets are favored by 2, and the total is 217 points at point guard. Spencer Dinwiddie is at 6,700 on FanDuel. They have bumped him $700 for the exact reason I've got no idea. He's averaging 27 over the last 5. It is a really good matchup for Dinwiddie against the Magic, so that's the only reason I would consider him, but I wouldn't want to do it in cash. Lord Alfred Payton's at 8,000, so that's a significant price for him, but going against the Nets is almost as good as going against the Magic if you're a point guard. So there is absolutely 50-55 point upside here for Payton and probably 40-45 point upside for Dinwiddie. So both guys can be used. I wouldn't feel comfortable in cash. They're more GPP guys. But going against each other, I think that's a total point guard stack situation that you can use in tournaments. Shooting guards. My boy Caris LeVert, 5,800. That is almost as lock-in as possible, averaging 31.5 over his last 5. I feel like you're getting 30 almost every night from Caris. Bang that home. Well, Evan Fournier at 61. Give me LeVert every day of the week. Now, maybe there's a little bit more upside from Fournier, but I wouldn't necessarily say so. Considering LeVert's had the highest scoring game out of the two across the entire season, I don't really see any interest in using Fournier at that elevated price. Stauskas is a guy that we've seen a couple of times this year have some big games, so he can be a GPP guy at minimum salary. Damari Carroll's at 52. He has just been putrid of late. Or the Blue Swimmer at 51. You have no reliability. And John Simmons at 6,100. Just not in that ballpark. Not at that level. Not someone I care too much about for DFS. At power forward, Rondé, 7,400. I feel like just riding this guy in for 33 every night minimum and then going from there. Love it for cash and has tournament upside. Well, as Gordon at 79. He dropped 55 in the last game. He averages 50 the last 3 times he's taken on the Nets. This is really, really good spot to use him, especially without Vooch. He is on fire coming back from that injury. At center, Bismack Biyombo. Now, he is up to 6,500. That makes it tough. I think you can get 30 to 31 out of him just from blocks and rebounds with a marginal level of upside. Now, if he was playing against anyone else, I probably wouldn't feel cash confident, but against the Nets, I do. We've seen lots of centers put up big numbers against the Nets. And Biyombo, maybe he can have an offensive explosion. Jarrett Allen, Tyler Zeller, Mo Spates, no real interest in any of those guys. On DraftKings, a few tournament options now. Evan Fournier at 59, a little bit better for him over on DraftKings with the scoring system. Not interested in cash, though. While Alfred Payton at 71, as I detailed earlier, really good option to use. And for cash, I like LeVert at 57. I like Biyombo at 56. I like Hollis Jefferson a ton at 63. And as Gordon at 79, same price as FanDuel. But you know, getting a 50 out of him should not be a shock to the system, given how well he has played and how well things set up for him in this matchup. 2 games left. We're going to talk about the Lakers and the Minnesota Timberwolves. Still no Kentavious Caldwell-Pope for the Lakers. No Lonzo Ball in this one either. At point guard, Tyus Jones at 6,400. That is very, very high, and I don't feel good about using that in cash. Yeah, there's a tournament value there, but there is no cash value at that price. Well, Jordy Clarkson at 74. Given what's happened to him the last couple of games, that's really, really tough to get behind at 7,400. So that would be a fade for me. Tyler Ennis at minimum salary. Yeah, sure. Why not? If he's going to start and play 40-odd minutes, you absolutely have to use him. We don't know that that'll be the case. Walton's changing lineups every day. He thinks he's Dave Yeager. So we don't know with Ennis, but he played well enough to think that there's a definite possibility that he does it again. So absolutely at minimum salary, he is going to be someone to look at. At shooting guard, the hitman, Josh Hart, 4,400. No KCP, no Lonzo. Bang, lock in. Let's go. 30-plus minutes, 30-plus point potential here. Love it. Wiggo's at 5,500. Nah. But for tournaments, sure. What if he has one of those weird games where he actually puts up more than one assist or he scores 28 points? That's a possibility. Jamal Crawford at 41 is a little bit tournamenty. At small forward, Jim's at 9,300. Jim Butler, that is. Yeah, I feel pretty good. I think the Lakers can keep this one close-ish. Both teams on a back-to-back. Of course, the Lakers on a double overtime. I think they can keep it close enough here that Butler has to play more than 28 minutes and be useful. So I do like him. Well, Ingram's at 6,800. A little bit disappointing in today's game, but I think a big bounce back is definitely on the cards. At power forward, Taj is at 6,100. Cash without much upside. Well, Kuzma's at 6,700. I really like that price for Kuzma. And then we head on to the centers. It's Julius Randle at 6,200. I'm in on that on cash. I like the situation. I don't know. Walton could screw us up, but I think that we've seen two massively good games from Randle in a row. So another one shouldn't be too much of a stretch. While Towns is at 9,600, bang, I'm in on that. I really, really like Towns here. This is a huge opportunity for him to go for another 60. I'm in on, like, over a guy like Adetokounmpo, I'm in on him. Over a guy like Butler in that price range, I'm in on Towns in this matchup. Let's go to DraftKings now. There's a lot in this game to like. Jamal Crawford for tournaments at 3,700. Wigo at 56 for tournaments. Ingram at 65 and Jordy Clarkson at 67. And there's a bunch I love for cash. Butler at 8,700 is fantastic. Towns at 97, same as on FanDuel. Kuzma at 69.
Giggity!
Julius Randle at 5,000. That is the best play of the day, almost. 5,000 for Randle on DraftKings. Tyus Jones at 56. I'm okay with that for cash on DraftKings. Taj Gibson at 57. And Josh the Hitman Hart at 4,800. Just value all over the place in this game on DraftKings. The last game of the night, we've got the Portland Trailblazers and the Chicago Bulls. Of course, we don't know if Damian Lillard's going to play. So if Lillard is out, it is going to be Shabazz Napier time, but we don't know whether he will play at this point. He's apparently going to be a game time decision. Lillard's at 8,900. I'd throw him into a tournament. That's about it. Wouldn't feel good in cash, even if he is ruled active and ready to play. Whereas Chris Dunn's at 8,100. Dunn has been putting up big numbers. I don't feel comfortable going with Dunn in cash at that sort of price, but I do think that he does have that tournament upside. Well, Napier's up to $6,000, and you think that's a bit high. He's averaging 40 and a half over the last three games. So 6,000, that's actually probably a little bit under where it needs to be if Lillard is out. Of course, 6,000 on Napier if Lillard plays is a horrible, horrible investment. At shooting guard, Justin Holliday's at 53. No for cash, but yes for tournaments. While CJ McCollum at 73, wouldn't feel comfortable if Lillard's in using him. But if Lillard is out, I'd be all over using him. More of a tournament spot, though. At small forward, David Nwaba. $4,000 for Nwaba. He had 33 points against the Wizards today. Probably heard them mispronouncing his name, so he went off. I actually don't mind it for cash. I feel like he's got a 20 point floor with a little bit of upside there. Denzel the Hammer Valentine, 4,300, just tournaments. He's been poor over the last couple. While Mo Harkless, Paul Zipser, and Evan Turner, I reckon if you add up all their production, it wouldn't even get to 30 points in this game. Let's see how wrong I am. At power forward, Lauri Markkanen, 5,500. No way for cash, but I think he's got that 40-point upside, which makes him a good tournament play. Aminu, I would spend the 300 and take Markkanen over Aminu. He's at 5,200, Al Farouk. While Punch Bob's at 44 and Mirotić at 6,700. That's too high for Miko Mirotić. For Mirotić, it's too high, 6,700, especially for cash. Ed Davis at 39. Don't even know why I mentioned him. At center, Yusuf Nurkic, 6,300. In on him, 30 point, feels like a really good floor for him. Back on him, he's got massive upside. He's got a decent floor at the moment too. While Rob Lopez at 4,600. Revenge game? He is a strong floor guy, but a limited ceiling sort of a player. On DraftKings for that one, for tournaments, I like McCollum at 73 and Justin Holliday at 52. Of course, Shabazz Napier comes into play if Lillard misses at 5,500. I like Chris Dunn a lot, 7,200. I'm in on that for cash on DraftKings. But overall, this game isn't quite as sexy as, say, that Lakers-Timberwolves contest. Let's have a look at some other sites. Yahoo for tournaments, Julius Randle, Shabazz Napier, Jakob Poeltl, David Nwaba, Jamal Crawford, DeLon Wright, Source Castillo. And for cash, it's the Muppet. It's the Hitman. It's Evan Fournier, Caris LeVert, Nurkic, Biyombo, Tyus, Jordy Clarkson, Chrissy Dunn, Hollis Jefferson, Az Gordon, Lord Alfred, and Jim Butler. On Moneyball for tournaments, Lord Alfred, Chris Dunn, Spencer Dinwiddie, Tyus Jones, John Simmons, Lauri Markkanen, Wigo, Damari Carroll, Valanciunas, Shabazz Napier, Jamal Crawford, DeLon Wright. And for cash, Nwaba, the Hitman, Fournier, Justin Holliday, LeVert, Taj, Julius Randle, Nurkic, Biyombo, Bledsoe, Kuzma, the future MVP, CJ McCollum, Aaron Gordon, Karl Anthony Towns, Jim Butler, and Yanni Adetokounmpo. And on Draft Stars for tournaments, Adetokounmpo, Lord Alfred, Eric Bledsoe, Tyus Jones, the Chief Al Farouk Aminu, the Muppet John Henson, Jakob Poeltl, Jamal Crawford, Nwaba, Ed Davis, and Source Castillo. And for cash, Josh the Hitman Hart, Serge Ibaka, LeVert, Biyombo, Taj, Ingram, Randle, Dunn, Clarko, Hollis Jefferson, CJ, Aaron Gordon, Kyle Lowry, Jim Butler, and Karl Anthony Towns. Hope you guys had a safe new year. I hope you guys are all reinvigorated and ready to attack DFS and seasonal fantasy with renewed vigor in 2018. If you are listening to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, go in there, give us a review. 2018 is the year for the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast. You can write that as your review. 5 stars is the way to go. And you can also find us on Google Play, on TuneIn, on Stitcher, and on Spotify, and of course on YouTube. Give it a thumbs up, give it a subscribe, and leave a comment below. I am Josh Lloyd, and you can find me on Twitter at @redrock_bball. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. CJ McCollum.